welcome to another edition of Old School Guns, the podcast that tells you exactly like it is and how it is. And as you've noticed, we've introduced a little bit of intro music. This is public domain stuff. And, we'll keep it or switch it out as we can. But anyway, we just kind of thought that a little bit of music would brighten up the podcast. Started it with the Halloween broadcast, and I thought it was something we can continue over into subsequent episodes. Of course, we'd like to extend a welcome to our newest listeners. We have some, Oregon, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Alabama, and of course all the other states we've mentioned previously, including Kansas, Missouri, Colorado, Michigan, New York, New Jersey. Places in free America and behind the tofu curtain. So, and to all the listeners, and you know, the funny part about Podbean is there's this category called Others. And so I don't know where those are. I mean, because I'll show every once in a while we get one in Australia or, you know, someplace like that. But there's a category called Others, which is in the USA, but I don't know where it is. I don't know if it's territories or, you know, maybe just some states, but even if there's a single download in a state, it'll usually single out that state. It doesn't, you know, wait for two or three podcast downloads to go there. So I don't know where Others is, but you're in the USA and you're very welcome. So if you're one of the, if I don't mention you, you may be in that mysterious category of Others. So, anyway, let's get down to the usual. Okay, you know, we again, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because, you know, we've gone over it and over it. We have the same tactics, same things with the impeachment. And part of it, I don't really want to talk about the impeachment because it's really just nonsense. But the tactics being used are the same that have been used against gun owners for a long, long time. Lies, misinformation, misleading the public, the drumbeat, and by the drumbeat I mean the media and its allies, you know, highlighting everything and continually reporting so that there's a drumbeat towards a march towards some sort of conclusion. You know, turning everything into a crisis, you know. We have a crisis here, a crisis there. And as Rahm Emanuel, the Democratic strategist, has said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And I'm sure some of this stuff is, you know, rooted in this Saul Alinsky, you know. When I was studying for my master's degree, I had to take some sort of class from these two professors, husband and wife. You know, the predictable, leaf-eating college professors. And, you know, they did a good job of remaining pretty much apolitical. But when they started delving into Saul Alinsky, and I think it was a class on diffusion or some diffusion of innovations or some nonsense. something that can be easily explained by either market conditions or overwhelming need, but somehow they made a whole class out of all this. And one aspect of the class was something about Saul Alinsky, and I'd only seen that kind of stuff from studying, I think it was, you know, Rush Limbaugh or somebody talked about all this kind of stuff when Clinton was in office and how they were followers of this Saul Alinsky. So anyway, just to get back to the main point, it's, you know, they use these really despicable and terrible tactics. I mean, they just, you know, they lying to people, deliberately misleading them, and we've heard all these lies. You know, they conflate semi-automatic with fully automatic. They conflate high capacity with the fact that the guns, quote, never miss. You would never think that an AR-15 is capable of missing a target if you listen to them. Military grade, anything that looks, you know, like it has any kind of military rifle ancestry or handgun ancestry is somehow military grade. You know, they use all these bogus terms and they try to mislead people. And a lot of times we think, well, it's just because they're stupid. I don't think they're stupid. I think they deliberately do that. I think when you see a news clip of a machine gun firing fully automatic, and they tell you that that's essentially semi-automatic, or that's the kind of weapon that was used at whatever incident crime you can name. I think that's usually just bogus. I think they're deliberately misleading people because, unfortunately, what people know about their world, they're garnering from media, television, and social media. And it's amazing to me now how Democrats are so afraid of social media, something that when Barack Obama was raising money in 2008 on social media, they were all for it. They were all in 100%. Now that they have a fear that, face it, Elizabeth, get me a beer. I'm going to get me a beer. Warren and creepy old Joe Biden aren't going to raise money on social media. They're not, because they have no appeal to a younger audience. They have no appeal to the folks in the middle, and they certainly have no appeal to what appears to be right now a very mobilized conservative Republican base, which has really had enough of impeachment and a bunch of these. This stuff has to stop. The lying has to stop. And one of the things that gets lied about the most are firearms and firearms rights. You never see the positive stories of somebody defending themselves. You never see that. You never see a lot of the good, the programs that are out there that benefit youth, that benefit disabled people and disabled veterans. You never see any of that. All you really see is just a lot of stuff that's misinformation. And it was all designed to support their 100% confiscation agenda, and that's really kind of blowing up in their face. Now, of course, nothing says it can't revive, because it always seems to, but a lot of people aren't buying that. They have staked a lot on gun control, and at least at this point, it looks like that's not paying off. And through all this, I think one of the best stories that's, of course, not really being reported at all is really how the NRA has kind of rebounded from the rough period it had this summer. The annual meetings, the dismissal of Oliver North, the parting of the ways with Chris Cox, the attacks on Wayne LaPierre, which, at the very first couple of podcasts I did, because I started in the summer, I was pretty hard. I said they need some reform, and they probably do. And it looks like they're they're probably going to head that way, I think. But the bottom line is, the media was, the seriously crippled NRA. The NRA is down and out and everything else. And that's not true. The NRA is an extremely formidable organization, always has been, and will continue to be. And the disappointing part in all that, were all the little, and again, I called them pipsqueaks, and that's what they are, and, you see them on YouTube, you see them here and there, and, the ones calling, I won't give another penny till LaPierre is gone, that's fine. Cut off your nose to spite your face. We have an existential election coming up. This next election will decide whether or not you have gun rights or you don't. Democrats win, you don't have gun rights. You don't. Republicans win, you have somebody you can hold accountable. And as I've pointed out in the past, Republicans have done gun owners dirty plenty of times, but at least we can hold them accountable because we are, for the most part, part of a larger center-right base of voters in the country. And, it used to be there were pro-gun Democrats, openly pro-gun Democrats. Those people have been exterminated over the last 40 years. I don't think you can be a pro-gun Democrat in the modern Democratic Party. I think that you just cannot exist. But there used to be a lot of pro-gun Democrats, it was never this strictly partisan issue. It has become a polarized and partisan issue, But it was never quite that way. There were always pro-gun Democrats, especially Democrats that represented rural areas or some of the states where there's a lot of outdoor activity. But the NRA is going strong. I for one, would welcome pro-gun Democrats. I don't think that we should be a single-party phalange organization or just tied to one political party's fortunes or misfortunes. I think we should have members who are members of different political parties. This should not be a partisan issue. Gun rights should not be a partisan issue. Really shouldn't be an issue at all. But it should not be a partisan issue at the very least. So that's enough of politics and all that. Let's get to some things that are a little better. One of the things I've run across on YouTube, which I think most gun enthusiasts would like, and certainly history buffs, it's really more of a history situation, kind of a show. But that's Mark Felton Productions. And he does a lot of World War II material and concentrates on some of the larger, usually the larger weapons, you know, things like tanks and aircraft and also some of the operations. And it's really just kind of obliquely related to small arms. But one of the ones I just saw recently was the last Wehrmacht Fallschirmjäger jump that they did in support of the Battle of the Bulge. And, obviously it didn't go well, but one of the things that I found was very interesting, and I'd heard this before, and that was that, the German paratroops in the Second World War did not jump with their individual weapons. Their rifles were in containers. So mostly, when they hit the ground, they had a pistol that they would carry, and then go recover your container and get your long arm. You know, obviously that is fraught with difficulty and leads to, you know, just some terrible consequences. One of them was that since many of their containers were lost, here they are, they parachute drop these guys, they're behind the lines, and guess what? They're armed with pistols and a very, very limited supply of ammunition. So, you know, you can't really think of a worse situation to be in than that. And when they came to what it did not cover, which is interesting, is that most of the pistols that the German Fallschirmjägers, the paratroops, would carry, it wasn't like P-38s and Lugers. It was Walther PPKs, Sauer 38H, these smaller kind of 32 and maybe 380 caliber firearms, you know, kind of smaller guns, kind of guns we would call pocket pistols or certainly concealable pistols today, and not in really knockdown military calibers. You know, they weren't 9mm. They were 32 ACP, 7.65 in European designation. But so you can imagine what a disaster that must have been. I can't think of anything worse than to be landed land unarmed practically in enemy territory. Pretty frightening to think about. But he's got a wide variety of things. Very interesting. If you like World War II equipment, technology, and some of the lesser known facts, definitely Mark Felton Productions on YouTube is worth checking out. I also want to say I tested, I mentioned it last podcast, the Fort Scott. It's kind of a cone-shaped bullet. It's actually called the TUI. I think I left that out. Tumble upon impact. And what it's supposed to do is basically tumble so that you don't need the hollow point action. You don't have to rely on the expansion of the bullet. And, you know, that's a very, very good idea because they feed exceptionally well. Because they come down to the little point, you know, it's a little pointy bullet. It feeds exceptionally well. And then you get the enhanced performance that you get out of a hollow point or out of an expanding round. So it's really really excellent. I enjoyed shooting them. They were a little more powerful than the low end stuff that I usually just practice with. So I like that. Functioned the gun very positively, but not abusively. Really well done. Really well done ammunition. And the last thing out there is, although I criticize their retroscope and think that you might get a better value with a Barska, the Brownells retro rifles are on sale, and I mean they're pretty sweet, very very sweet. Whenever I see the sale, I always mention it on the podcast. Essentially, you're getting something that's just as good, if not better, than a Colt AR-15 from years ago. So I would definitely, if you want one, jump on it. And I mean, the beautiful part about it was, back in the day, Colt would sell you the SP1 or the SP1 Carbine, okay? You can get those kind of equivalents. It's, you know, you can get the 601, which is like an early SP1. And you can get all the other variations, including the Proto, the very first AR-15 that had the trigger charging handle, one of my favorites. You've heard me talk about it, one of my favorites. You can get the XM16E1, which had the partial fencing and the three-prong flash suppressor. Then you can get the M16A1 clone, a really outstanding. And you also get the Shorty, the CAR-15. And these are just as good, just as durable, just as reliable, and I would even say maybe even a little bit better in some ways than the original Colt production. So, you know, to get this kind of variety and to get this kind of selection at, you know, very reasonable prices. I mean, there are guys who can go out and you can build one. You can try to build one of these things. Brownells will sell you the parts. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, unless you really enjoy doing that, it's a lot less hassle just to go get the pre-made rifle, and then you're on your way. You know, there's no fooling around, there's no part, single part you can't get, and all the rest of it. So, I mean, I think it's really outstanding to be able to get these rifles. The prices are attractive, and you know, it's absolutely great. And you know, there's no guarantee Brownells is going to make these things forever, so if you snooze, you may wind up losing. That's all I can say. I mean, there's no indication that they're going to give these up or stop production or anything. But like anything else, you know, product lines have to make money. And at a certain point, if these aren't making money, they will be gone. Just like the DSA, Light Barrel Israeli FAL. They only had so many kits. And there were guys on the FAL files, what I call the FOOL files, and they're dillying and dallying. Maybe they weren't even serious because they didn't have the money. And then there were guys who said, I put it in and I didn't like the waiting period, so I canceled my order. Oh, okay, well, guess what? Now you don't have one, you know, and they're gone. There are no more kits. They're gone. So now you have to find somebody who has one that's willing to sell it, and it's probably going to be at a premium. So, you know, these things don't last forever. And although the Brownells guns are not, they are not parts kit guns, there's just no guarantee that they're going to stay in production forever. I mean, the time to get them is now. And although I criticize the Military Arms Channel for its NRA stance and some of the other nonsense, he did do good reviews on these rifles. And basically, the one thing he said that really strikes home is that he really likes the simple, straightforward iron sight AR-15. There is a certain goodness about having the simple, reliable, agile, handy rifle that doesn't have all the crud on it, you know. And there's, you know, Brownells has tapped into something. The retro movement just isn't about people who like older guns. To me, the retro movement is about people who like things that are simpler and that work. And really, does all this complexity, does all this other stuff really, how much of a payoff do you really get with all that? And I would say that, you know, the benefits are there, but they're, for the most part, are they even usable to the majority of shooters that do that? And I will also say that, you know, one of the better things to do is, if you're going to learn an AR, You get one of these type rifles and learn how to adjust the sights and all that, all the goodness. You know, you learn how to adjust the sights, learn how to use the rear flip sight for the longer ranges if you desire, and the rest of it. And then when you move into the more complex ones that have, you know, the optics and the, you know, the lasers and the lights and all the other crud people put on these things, you know, then you've got a really good base of knowledge of what you're doing. I see a lot of people who they open their wallet, money flies out, and they get a rifle that, you know, looks like something a tier one operator is using. And did these guys actually even have the real knowledge to use it? There's a lot to learn there with optics and all the rest of it. There's a lot to learn there, and maybe going back to the basics is not a bad idea. I still believe there will be a counter-revolution where people say, I'm tired of spending money on optics. You know, because look at this. Look at it this way. And I know I'm rambling, but, you know, the EOTech, the Aimpoint, and the ACOG, which have been the hottest optics for probably the last 15 years, they're considered passé now, at least by the gamer community and at least by the people who service the gamer community under the guise of tactical trainers. Now it's these low-power variable optics. And these things, the prices on these are going up. Used to be back in the day that the Aimpoint was, what, about $300? A lot of money, but affordable. Same thing with the EOTech. Now the EOTechs are a little bit more expensive. Aimpoints are a lot more expensive. And some of the ACOGs are now basically obsolete because they're fixed power. You just don't see them. I know the military still has them, and they're excellent. I mean, crystal clear, beautiful, excellent scopes. But man, you know, you're paying about $1,000 to get one. I mean, I think they might have one or two models that are, you know, in the $900 range. Shoot, that's what the Brownells rifle on sale costs. You know, you get those from about $950, depending on the model, and they have different models on sale. But you get those from about $950 up. And so, when you're talking about, that's what just an optical sight costs, you know, that's starting to get really into some fantastic money. I mean, we're getting to the point, it started with precision rifles where the optics would cost at least as much, and in some cases, twice as much or more than the rifle. Now we're getting to that in tactical rifles where these, you know, these high dollar optics are ruling the roost. And you buy one, and in a few years later, well, that's old hat, you know. But, which is okay with me, because I just go with what works. I could care less what the latest and greatest Gucci thing to have is. I just like what works. But I'll tell you, iron sights work, and they will work well. There will be a counter-revolution. Now, there may be new iron sights that they put on these things. And, you know, they've always kind of experimented with more precise iron sights and things. But there may be some change in the iron sight. You know, whether it's something colored, maybe it's some sort of fiber optic deal or something else. But iron sights will make a comeback. And I, for one, think that'll be a very interesting day when that happens. So, the Brownells Retro Rifle Sale, don't miss it. Be there or be square. Okay, let's get to my favorite part of the show, favorite part of the podcast, which is questions and answers. So, our first question comes to me. This one's actually been sitting around since before the Halloween one. And before the Halloween podcast, I should say, if you don't know what the Halloween one is. Have you used surplus powder for 7.62x51 or 30-06 M2 equivalent hand loading? What that means is, have I used the surplus powder? Some of it is pull-down powder, which is salvaged from cartridges, and some of it is just military powder in bulk that they get from overruns or something else. And the answer is, I have not used it, but I am not opposed to using it. It's pretty economically priced. This stuff runs from about $110 to about $125 or $30 for an 8-pound jug. And if you shoot something like 50 caliber BMG, it's very, very good because that's where you get the powder to do that. Although I know there's some commercially available powder, but this is the stuff that's actually in the military cartridges. So it's good stuff, but I would never rely on it to make precision hand loads. I would strictly use it to make my battle or, you know, tactical rifle ammunition that does not have to be cutting edge accuracy. Same thing, these places usually sell, sometimes they sell processed brass, and other times they sell pulled bullets, you know, the bullets that they get from the salvaged ammunition. And you know, those things, they will work, they will be fine. I'm not a real fan of the 30 caliber M80 bullet, I don't think. Sometimes I've had good accuracy from it, sometimes I haven't. So, you know, it's kind of, your mileage may vary, but if you're putting together, you know, you want to put together 2,000 rounds of 7.62 NATO, yeah, that's a way to go. You know, you get two jugs of the powder, and if you have the bullets and you already have the hand-loading equipment and you've got the empties, yeah, it's not a bad way to go. It's going to be a lot of work. And again, with hand-loading, you know, the best advice I can give you is, you know, it's all about quality control. So do your brass in small batches, making sure that the primer pocket crimp is out of it if you're using military brass. Inspect it like crazy because, you know, it's a fool's errand to blow up a nice rifle because you're cheaping out on ammunition. You know, brass cases you can get anywhere. So make sure that your brass is in really good shape. Stay away from the stuff that's badly dented and the rest of it. And make sure that it's trimmed. You know, a lot of people don't really talk about trimming, but you know, trimming is critical, especially in a battle rifle. Semi-automatic rifle it's critical that they're trimmed to the correct length, because if they're not, they can jam the action. The other thing to pay attention to is the crimp. And you know, I never really was a fan of what they called the sealant, you know, the stuff that seal keeps the moisture out. They put it around the bullet and kind of then seat the bullet and it dries. But you know, I think that can create another benefit to that. Is not only does it keep moisture out, but it will also help that keep that neck tension and the friction between the bullet and the neck, so that when it's going through the semi-automatic loading cycle and the, you know, cartridge kind of gets bounced around inside the gun up against feed ramps and into the chamber, you know, having that a little bit of extra that prevents the bullet from being pushed back into the case, that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. And I don't think that, you know, it's another little added element of safety that I think is a very positive. But yes, you can use that stuff. Will you get great accuracy? No. Will you have rounds that are fun to shoot and economical? Yes. So, you know, pay your money, take your choice. But I think it's a, I think it's pretty reasonable. And I actually may do some over this winter just to have something to do, so I have plenty of rounds for FALs and other things in the spring. Okay, here's the next one. I listened to the Halloween podcast. Do you believe in the paranormal and cryptozoology? Well, the answer is I'm very, very skeptical. And I even told my own story, you know, the rusty red truck with the black fenders. You know, I'm not opposed to the fact that there could be something out there that we don't understand. After all, science just explains what we can understand. And as you go back through history, you know, that changes quite a bit. At one time, they thought they could change lead into gold. Well, we can't. But science at the time thought you could. So, you know, to go back through it, you know, cryptozoology. Do I believe in Sasquatch? I'm becoming more skeptical. When I was younger, and like a teenager and all that, you know, and I lived in the area where they'd been seen and the tracks had been found and all that, and realized the vastness of that of that area, you know, from Northern California up to Washington, you know, the vast wilderness there. Doesn't really get a lot of credit for being a vast wilderness, but it really is. I probably was more inclined to believe it then. Now I think with all the technology and trail cameras and all that, we just don't seem to be turning up the kind of evidence that would lead us to the conclusion that they're out there. And I say that by saying, you know, we still get the fuzzy photographs, which is it a Sasquatch or is it just, you know, a big guy in a hoodie? You know, I don't know. So that's where I am with that. I do believe in cryptozoology. I think, you know, they found the coelacanth in 1937. Everybody thought it had been extinct for, you know, 50 million years or something. And yet they're found swimming around out in the ocean. They're still out there swimming around now. I don't even think they're endangered. The next thing that they found was, you know, there's very strong indicators that the Tasmanian tiger, which they thought went extinct in 1935, is probably there may be a small population of those on the Australian mainland and maybe a few others. So there could be a few of those out there. Could be, you know. And I hope they find them, actually. But do I actually believe in paranormal ghosts? I have to say that I'm kind of turned off by all that. I'm associated with the Jesse James farm and birthplace due to the fact that I'm related to Frank and Jesse James, so distantly, but you know, it's a lot of fun. And you know, there are people, even some people who work out there who, you know, have perpetrated things that I think are blatantly false and represented things, misrepresented things. You know, and it's just the same thing of, you know, lights that show up in photographs, and a lot of that is just all optical illusion. It has to do with the lenses of the camera and lights and all that. And yet they swear there are orbs flying around, and you know, people great imaginations, and then they're just some outright hoaxes. And you know, I've seen several things that are just outright hoaxed. So I'm really, what I would say is, if it's out there, unfortunately, the layers of hoaxsters and people misinterpreting what they see, people embellishing stories and all that, we're not leading to a convergence that something else is there. We're just leading to the fact that for those who believe, there's evidence out there. For those who are don't believe, there'll never be enough evidence, especially of that type. And for those who are just skeptical but open-minded, I don't know where this is leading. I'm just not seeing this kind of stuff going. Makes for great entertainment, and it makes for fun things. But you know, there's not enough. But you know, there are these weird stories, and you catch these weird stories now and then. Like I told you, the red truck. Nobody ever saw that thing. Nobody, you know, the truck that nobody's seen, the truck that nobody really catches. There are stories about, you know, a guy will. An old kind of, you know, scruffy guy comes into a store, buys some food, and pays for it with money that hasn't been used in 40 years. You know, what's that about? And you know, is that even possible? Is it just old money that he found? Is it, you know, somebody who's kind of, you know, losing their mental ability, so they're dressing up in old clothes and, you know, they don't really care what they look like or their appearance? I don't know. You know, you just don't know, but there are enough weird things that, you know, there's definitely enough weird stories out there, and I'm not saying not investigate them, but I do remain a bit skeptical on those. So that's where I am with those things, but they are entertaining, and who knows, someday, science may be rewritten. Okay, here's another one that's a little more down to earth. What is the best beginner AR type rifle? And I'll say that, you know, I've asked this because some people, you know, there are AR-22s out there. I don't know why, but there are. Here's what I would say is, depends on what you want it for. Number one, it always the end use is always the determiner. But so if you're shooting three gun, get whatever the top competitors use and go with that if you can afford it. If you're shooting service rifle, go with whatever they're using there. if it's just general shooting and just something to have or something that may be used for self-defense, you know, you go with a standard M4 pattern. Everybody makes them now. Everybody makes them. I would start with Ruger or Smith & Wesson. They're really nice guns. You can go other places. You know, a lot of great manufacturers out there. Shouldn't really single any out. But the reason I like Ruger and Smith & Wesson are, you know, you're going to get really good warranties with those. Could go with Brownells. I love Brownells. And, you know, starting out with a retro AR would be really pretty cool. But, you know, if you don't really know what you want it for, you really want the most versatile one, which would be an M4 style, the flat top. And, you know, if you still want to experiment with the iron sights, you can always get the carry handle with the standard sight and get the standard, you know, it'll have the standard front sight post. Or if it's just got the block with the Picatinny rail piece on it, you can get an iron sight that'll go on top, on a front sight that'll go there. But that'll be the best, because that way you can try a variety of optics if you want. You can try the irons. It's adjustable, which is nice, because if more than one person is using it, like I said in the other last podcast, you know, if somebody else is using it, that's another great reason to have that adjustable buttstock. And, you know, you can try different things on it. You can kind of play with it. And, you know, that way it's a very, very modular rifle, and you're taking advantage of its big advantage of modularity. So that's what I would get, just the standard M4 type rifle. Doesn't have to have the M203 cutouts or the SOCOM barrel. It doesn't have to have all that. Just good basic gun. And you'll find that it's really a pleasure to own. So that's the beginning AR I would go with. Now, if you're a history buff, I would definitely look at Brownells to plug them again. Here I accused a couple guys of running commercials for them. But I honestly believe if you're a history buff, they are great guns. And you really, really enjoy them. And the other part I like about it is, you know, they're so light and agile, even with the fixed buttstocks and the fixed carry handle, that you'll really find them a pleasure to use. So they're really, really nice rifles. But I would go with the M4 style just because of its modularity and the adjustable buttstock, the flat top. Those are all good things. Okay, next question. How do you convince people of the need for high-capacity/standard-capacity magazines? And, you know, this, I used to argue. I used to do that by arguing. And, of course, you argue with people and they start getting illogical and stupid. The fact of the matter is you're never going to convince somebody unless you actually show them the need. You know, it's that establish the learning need, as they used to say. So, you know, you can argue with them. You can say, I want 30 rounds because of this. And, well, nobody needs 30 rounds. Then you get into that need versus want versus, you know, military grade and blah, 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 blah. You can go down that rat hole if you want. I've gone down it enough times, so I don't really do that unless I have to. The best way to do it, and if you're talking about a family member, it's easier. If you're talking about a stranger at work or something, it's a lot harder. But take them to the range. You take them to the range, and you set up, if you can, especially if you can get on even a square range where you can set up multiple targets. Give them multiple targets and put three rounds in and say, okay, man, those are three bad guys. They're charging at you. Go ahead and engage. And they'll go bang, 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 and then, wow, it's empty. You know, wow, it's empty. Then do the same thing with, you know, 15, 20, or even 30 rounds in there. And they'll get it. They'll actually get it. You see what I'm saying. You demonstrate, hey, if you only have a limited capacity, you have a problem with multiple attackers. That's what you're demonstrating. You can also demonstrate that, hey, you know, the fast follow-up shot is maybe necessary because maybe somebody is, maybe you miss, and they're all of a sudden they're bringing a weapon to bear on you. So therefore, a fast follow-up shot is really nice. No rifle is better than that than the AR. And handguns can do the same thing too. You know, the difference between having a 6-round revolver and a 19-round semi-automatic, it's a big deal. Just, you know, put them in the pretend situation where, hey, guess what? You're in a house and six people are coming in okay, here's your, you can either have six rounds. Now, if you miss, somebody's not going to get hit, and if you even if you hit everybody, you have no guarantee that they're all going to be stopped. So therefore, you know, without having to reload, without having to worry about how to fumble and reload, and even a semi-automatic, when you're under severe stress like that, very simple actions become very difficult, which is why high capacity is a very desirable trait. So that's basically how you can do it. It's easier to do with family members or very close friends who you might be shooting with anyway, or, and who may go to the range, you know, at least once in a while. You can do that with perfect strangers or with people at work or casual acquaintances. You know, it's going to be almost impossible to demonstrate a need if they're in the gun control, you know, if they've been influenced by gun control propaganda that, hey, you only need five rounds, you know, because that's all you can legally use for hunting, even though that's a completely arbitrary number. You know, five rounds, well, that's legal for hunting. Well, that's completely arbitrary. You know, if the limit for most hunting states was 30 rounds, well, that would be a completely arbitrary number too. So, but they wouldn't want to use that. So, you know, it's one of those things of, you know, arbitrary numbers of rounds, which are only going to be obeyed by law-abiding citizens, you know, they just don't work. And so that's why high-capacity / standard-capacity magazines are, you know, very popular and very necessary. It's one way that you can even the playing field, even against multiple opponents. Okay, here is the last question we have for this podcast. And I guess this is one of those questions. The first part you kind of cut off, which is, if you think you know so much, or if you're such a big expert, or if you think you're such hot manure, why don't you teach tactics and self-defense? And that is actually a very fair question. That is a very fair question. I do not do that for a variety of reasons. Number one, I think there's plenty out there. And I don't know that I could sufficiently add to the body of knowledge to do that. Number two is, I'm not really in a position where I can devote the kind of time and money and effort into that. The insurance, the making an arrangement with some sort of a facility, doing up the lesson plans and all those things to not only get them approved, but also do that. Then there's that whole marketing piece. And I've talked to you about it before. You know, you don't make money doing that by just teaching one really good class, because people come to your class, that's it, and they go. There's always an architecture of classes which at least are advertised to build additional skills. You know, there's basic and intermediate and advanced, and you know, you see that stuff. So that's all there. I don't have the time, the effort, or the inclination to do that. Another real reason is I just believe that I don't want to accept the personal liability of, I taught somebody something and they got in a situation and they did what I taught them and it didn't work. I mean, that would be, on my conscience, that would be a very difficult thing. Do I show people, and they have to be very trusted people, but I show very trusted people some things I know. But it's never in exchange for money. It's never in exchange of, this will make you a bad guy. I always got the, you know, always think about the example of the guy who goes to a dojo for 5 years. And then the first time he gets in a street fight, even though he's a black belt, he gets the tar beat out of him, you know. So I don't want to be the guy who turns somebody like that loose, you know, thinking that they have skills or protection that they, in fact, don't have. So I don't do it for that reason. Another reason is, I think a lot of the instructors are, you know, they're using their resumes. A lot of them are military. A lot of them are police. You know, I have no real problem with that. It is America. We are capitalists. But, you know, I think a lot of times credentialism is not the best thing. So, you know, I don't really, trading on something like that can sometimes leave a little sour taste for me, professionally anyway. I don't really object to people doing it. I just don't know that I think very highly of it. So that's where I am with that. I do believe in, you know, some of the things that I believe are very unconventional, especially when it comes to the kind of equipment and how to employ it and what the legal ramifications will be. I told you, In the Gravest Extreme was a very important book written by Masoud Ayoub saying, hey, after the shot, there's going to be all kinds of things. And I think that the extension of that, he was really talking about self-defense-oriented shooting. But I think there's also an extension of that into this dystopian prepper world that that is out there. People are seeing TV and movie fantasies, and they think that's how it's going to be. And frankly, you know, you're not going to be allowed to run around killing people because the government has ceased to function for some period of time. And in the ultimate fantasies of this, an extended or permanent situation where there's going to be no rule of law and no functioning government. You know, I just think that's a fantasy. You're not going to be shooting people at 300 yards. You're just not. It's going to be something that, you know, you're in Hurricane Katrina and you start shooting people, they will catch up and you will be held account in a court of law for that. And that's just one of the things I believe. So I don't really want to teach people a lot of killing skills and then have them go out and use it. And then, you know, sometime later, some period of time later, they're in the Gray Bar Hotel as a guest of the, as a guest of Uncle Sam, because they really absorbed what I taught them and they're really good at it. And unfortunately, they have been prosecuted for it. So that's why I don't teach any of that. I think that, you know, it's much more valuable to help newer shooters with basic marksman skills and be a coach. It's much more valuable to do that. It's much more valuable to be a good range officer and provide a safe environment where people can practice and learn how their weapons work and learn the limitations. You know, a lot of people believe that you spend enough money on something and you won't miss, and that's just not the case. So giving them a safe practice environment, I think, is a lot better than trying to come across like I'm a Billy Badass and I'm going to teach you all these ninja skills on how to kill people with firearms. And I guess I'll sum this all up by saying, you know, it's not about me. It's not about, you know, what I can teach, what I can do, where I've been or where I haven't been. It's not about that. It's about, as a gun enthusiast and a responsible gun owner and a person who takes, you know, some of those training and self-defense situations seriously, it's about being a good steward and a good example and helping the hobby progress in a very, very positive way. And so I think, you know, for myself personally, I would rather kind of pursue range officer, helping people shoot, hold matches that people can enjoy, do stuff like that rather than teach any kind of tactics or anything like that. So anyway, that sums up this edition of Old School Guns. And again, hit any of the buttons that you can hit on Podbean or iTunes, like, follow. You can always send questions and comments, and I'll be very happy to include them. And so until the next podcast, this is Old School Guns out.